is April 23rd, 2005. I'm Tom Davis, and I'm interviewing Grace Ornstein, who is a Peace Corps volunteer in Nyasaland, Malawi One Project, as a secondary school teacher from October to 1962 to December 1964. Grace, would you give your current name and address?
Grace Manning Ornstein. I'm at 1530 Euclid.
Okay, let's start by just asking you to describe your present life situation, your family, work, and other things you think are important.
Well, we have two children, Jeffrey and Katie. Jeffrey is married and living in London with Sonnet, and our two grandkids. He lives in New York City. Mo and I are enjoying our later years. We're 65 and 69. He retired from his law firm 7 years ago and is currently working as a consultant to my nonprofit and King and those kinds of things. I'm very, very busy with a private practice working with families with young children. In a therapy setting, and I've also founded an agency called The Link, which provides early intervention mental health services to children, consultation to teachers at child development centers in California, Alameda County, California, serving low-income, high-risk families. I am also a Montessori teacher and ran my own Montessori school for a number of years, forever, and finally completed my 1997.
Grace, maybe if you could think back to the year before you joined the Peace Corps and what experiences led up to your signing up to be a Peace Corps volunteer.
I was in my senior year at DuPont University in Greencastle, Indiana, when I received notice that the Peace Corps was looking for volunteers. It was also kind of in the air because Kate had made a speech at University of Michigan introducing the country, and it seemed to really strike a note with me personally, and I maybe a number of people in my generation were very eager to have an experience of the third world country. In fact, I remember one of my thoughts was that I would be able to really know what it meant that piece had been missing for my life. And we were also a very idealistic generation, I think, coming out of the 50s and being conformist in my college years and beginning to have kind of an activist notion because graduating, I had spent my junior year abroad in college, and my perspective was somewhat broader than a sheltered high school community. So I was eager to find out more about it, and I had a scholarship to a university to get it. But when I found out about a Peace Corps, my sense of adventure took over, and I do remember a conversation with my mother and father over the phone when I had decided I would apply, and my mom was very resistant and thought it was not a good idea and worried about my safety, and Daddy got on the phone and said, you know, go for it, Grace. So I went ahead and I applied, and along with two other women in my sorority, Judith Smith, and lo and behold, we all three got in, and we were thrilled. We were just thrilled. It was going into the unknown and experiencing it.
One of the most common questions from 1961 to the present is, of course, why did you join the Peace Corps?
Well, I think more than anything else, I really wanted to think that I would be going over and live a life that was much dealing with more subsistence, and that seemed very important to me. Was the first reason I went, and the second reason was because just the sheer sense.
Describe the process and timing of your application process, and did you have a specific country or project in mind?
No, I didn't have one in mind when I first applied, Africa was offered to me along with a couple of other countries, I can't remember which, and I knew I wanted to go to Africa right away. I think at the time there was a lot in the news about Africa. Lumumba had just been assassinated. There was quite a few new books coming out on the hope of the future Africa. There seemed to be a new vision for those countries. The colonialist thing, We ended up going to Nyasaland over to Dr. Kamuza Banda, who had had served the requisite jail term, you know, that put him in charge. And this was not the only change. Adesias were also going through that kind of a change. Haile Selassie had been a change in Africa, and it was all very hopeful. And we were really, I was excited to be a part of that.
You've described a little bit of your friends and family's reactions to your being accepted to the Peace Corps. How did you prepare yourself and your and others for the dislocation of entering into the 2 years of Peace Corps service?
I was so naive and just didn't think of it as a dislocation. I just somehow had total faith that everything would be taken care of. And I'm embarrassed to say I remember arriving at Syracuse, New York at the Onondaga Hotel with not a whole lot of money in my pocket. Just ready and open for whatever would come my way. I wouldn't have called it dislocation so much as the word I keep using is just adventure and going to a new place. And well, that seemed very positive to me. So I wasn't seeing disruption in my life at all. Young, I was 22 years of age. I was graduated, had already spent a year abroad, kind of knew what that meant. And,
tell us a little bit about the project you were invited to join and what your reactions were to the project in Yaslan.
Well, I was, this is another piece of the training that'll come up later. I had been raised to be a teacher, you know, that's something to fall back on. I never expected to really have much of a career, and that all changed when I came back. But, so education and teaching had been something I'd been kind of interested in for years, so it seemed very appropriate for me to be involved in an education project. What was really interesting is describing what he thought would be a almost a developmental progression of bringing individuals out of poverty-stricken, limited educational settings, including our own settings, as in Harlem. There's a lot of discussion about new school programs that were going into Harlem. Several field studies that had been done about teachers who had gone into Harlem and experienced difficulties there, and wondering if there was any hope for these people at the time. This was before, when was the segregation? Just after, I think it was passed in 53. So we knew schools were being segregated, but they were, integrated, but it was a real, no, it wouldn't have been 53. When did, schools voted in.
Under, I don't know about the voting, but it was under Eisenhower's right, administration. So he sent the National Guard in.
Well, it might have been 53 then. Yeah. Anyway, and of course, when Kennedy came in, he was very involved in making integration happen, and that's when the end. It felt, a lot, and it was part of our prejudice in hindsight, that it would be impossible, even though we were committed to this kind of movement, to make us all equal, to bring the African-Americans, who were the primary minority at that time, into the mainstream. And so there's a lots of discussions about that and wondering about that that I found just really fascinating. We also did some teacher training. That is, actually went into the classroom, was part of our training. And we didn't do a lot of that, but it did kind of prepare us for the educational setting. So I thought that training that we got by way of preparing us to be teachers fostered really and enjoyed that aspect of it.
Talk a little bit about the Peace Corps training in Syracuse. What were some of your thoughts and reactions to the training? Tell us a little bit about what training you experienced there.
I just kind of went over the training that I got by way of the educational component. We were also trained in a language. I was trained in Chinyanja. It's in Chitimbuka, northern section of it. I forgot to use my Chinyanja. I got very fluent in Timbuku. The training itself and being at the Onondaga Hotel is one of the really most enjoyable and funny aspects of all of our experiences and telling the stories of it. Some of it was just sheer happenstance of the people that we were next door to in the hotel, Irma the Body, which I'm sure somebody will mention, the National Syracuse Nationals, which is a basketball team, and the John Birch Society, all located around us with very different perspectives that we all were watching us. It was a great kind of bad. Food was okay. But we really had a lot of fun hanging out together, and across the street was Timmy's Bar. Some people drank, I didn't. And of course, I met my husband, Mo Orenstein, and he had a very fast and furious courtship and got married just before we went over into the Peace Corps. So it was a very happy commingling. And occasional worries as some people didn't make it. Two people, I think, was that going to, am I talking?
a little more about that whole selection and training process. Were there any surprises or disappointments in the training or selection process? And then hindsight, did the training prepare you? Was it useful during your service?
I think the educational component of the training was useful. The language was not the thing that was going on during training, as we were all being interviewed by psychologists and felt very intimidated about the psychological status that we might be given. We were doing Rochards, and so there's a lot of laughter about that. There was one other thing. Say that again. Oh, the disappointment was that the three people were selected out. A couple of them we were very close to, and we didn't understand why they were going, and so it was mysterious and somewhat didn't want to explain it to us. We tried to find out.
Oh, tell me about your initial reactions to Nyasaland when you first arrived in the country, and describe, you know, sort of your responses to the project, where you were assigned, the people, mm-hmm. The language, mm-hmm. anything else that comes to your mind.
Yeah. Well, it was a long trip over, and we spent 3 days in London, I think 3 days. I lived in Nairobi, pretty exhausted. And went straight on to Dar es Salaam. I don't remember a lot of that, except that I had 4 molars that had been pulled before I was where I left the country, and I was in a great deal of pain. They got infected, and so I was able to get some penicillin in with gurneys. I saw my first case of a man who was dying of rabies. It was a combination of me. They had so it was extremely happened. And then we went on to Blantyre, Nyasaland, and I guess my first surprise was in how comfortable we all were. This was a big center, been there before us, surrounded by trees, lush gardens of flowers, canna lilies, a big expansive kitchen, and a great gathering room, and we all had nice beds. So that was a surprise that we would come to such a state of, you know, be in such comfort. One tale was when I was going to the bathroom in the middle of the night and with the lights off. I had no idea until my husband went just after me and turned the lights on that a black mamba was wrapped around the bottom of my toilet stool. That was a shock. I was immediately aware of the danger we could be in. And what I had stories of taking Kennedy up on his health interest and doing a pit hike. That was great. We had multiple meetings that were meant to initiate. And we went on to our assignments, and I think I flew up to Mazuzu from Blantyre, and that was the first time I had been in an airplane. A little pipe hiking was quite an experience because it was on open grassland and it wouldn't have been a runway. Aware from the air of the lushness of the countryside and the green and the trees and beautiful the land was. Another surprise was we drove in from the airport on a dirt road, and we came to an area of tarmac that was beautifully laid and with a very nice landscape going down the middle. And then we went off the tarmac. It was about, I would say, maybe 500 feet total, back onto a dirt road that eventually took us to Mazuzu, which was the secondary school. At the tarmac was laid for the visit of Queen Elizabeth several years previously, so that she could have some pictures taken, you know. And again, to my surprise, we were put in quite a lovely, though very simply constructed home, and it was in high regard. So we were finding ourselves, I was finding myself in a prestigious position when in fact I had gone there hoping to be just among the villages and really working to its level. But now secondary, it was a school, a boarding school, the boys and girls were there in the dormitory. And I was an English teacher primarily. Remember, I taught two subjects. Oh, I can't remember, French, I think. Oh, and arts and crafts. Those were the subjects that I taught, and felt totally inadequate to teach English, even though I had an English background. I learned the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner and heard and trying to figure out ways to bring these materials to the boys and girls who were all in uniform and very serious students. Most of them went back to their dorms. It was quite a challenge for me as a young teacher.
Tell us a little bit more about your work at Mazuzu Secondary School, a typical day, your relationship with other staff, with the other volunteers, with the students. Any stories about that or impressions?
Well, I guess I want to tell you a little bit more about our home, because now I'm remembering that we had a terraced garden going down over the escarpment, and we had an exquisite view of Livingstonia. We looked out at our windows, which were big and expansive windows off the front of our house, down this beautifully house where our houseboy, Laxton and Gombe, grew gardens of huge cucumbers, mammoth cucumbers, you know, like almost little mini watermelons, and flowers and vegetables, and next door the teacher had pigs, and they were always getting into people's gardens, and there's a lot of squabbles about that. There was a gazebo out front where we could take our tea if we wanted to. And so I forget the original question, but I'm just remembering that. And our day, the days were most often beautiful. When we arrived, it was probably the most perfect time of the year. The weather would have been warm, just having come out of the rain. There's still a little bit of rain going on. I remember one trip we took down to Plantyre to see Prince Philip come to turn over the government to. Our days were getting up in the morning to have breakfast. Thomas, our cook, for classes and be down there, and to have the British flag go up. And sing God Save the Queen. And I guess every day, and often we would attend the church. There was a church where we started with a morning service. I don't think Lady and Sir and Lady Rosevere, who were the service leaders for each student that came on board, and constantly. They were a very dedicated couple and wanted to do the best they could for these children. We'd teach classes, which is right up the road from the school, and have a simple lunch, long lunch, probably not go back until 2. It was left about within 6 months of our arrival, and an Australian woman, Sue Bampton, again, we were quite close friends with her. She taught me how to make an African teacher who actually then asked her position while we were there. And one of the things that happened was that when I was 8 or 9 months into the teaching year, I realized that I thought that my teaching skills weren't being put to good use. So I mentioned this to Mr. Tomlin, who told Mr. what was his name? Mowowsi. Did I give him a name? I think his name is Mr. And he took that as a personal criticism and talked to Bob Poole. And the next thing we knew was I guess it would have been June or so, there now. And so we were transferred to Kasungu. So we spent 1 year in Mazuzu and then another year in Kasungu. Which turned out for us to be just great.
Tell us a little bit about Kasungu. Where was it in relation to And was it a different type of school or the same type?
It was very similar quarters. I think they were both government schools. Mzizu, of course, was hills and lush hills and not too far from Nakata Bay. So much more of a forested area with great vistas. And Chinyanja was the language. It was in the central part of Nyasaland, flatlands. They spoke Ichewa there. And so that was no help to us because we had been trained in Chinyanja. So we never did become fluent in one of the native languages. The quarters were very much the same, brick houses. The water was always interesting. The waters were brought to a pump outside of the house in large tin barrels by our houseboy, Laxton, who accompanied us to Kazan, on whom we were very dependent, which was an interesting experience when we first got there. Water then had to be pumped up to the container on the top of the roof, which then by gravity was flowed into our toilets and our bathtub. But because it was such a limited water supply and very difficult for Lax to do, we became very frugal with our water. And there was a stove that allowed us to, once the stove was heated up in the morning, we could actually have hot water for baths. So there were these kinds of conveniences. I had a portable record player so I could play classical music when I wanted to. A beautiful front porch, and we could look out over the plains for probably at least, and sitting at, on the porch at night, clear black sky with stars and a full moon, and watching the lights of lorries come up the road forever, you know, just 20, 30 minutes, you know, to kind of reach us. And there were red beetles everywhere.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so it was very different. We made friends with Patricia Clayton, whom we're still friends with this day, who was the this school, who lived in a house down the street from us that was very lush with tennis courts. Julian was about eight of the batters, and, you know, so the African would go out in the morning and check for snakes. And our schedule was very much the same as far as the teaching went. The school facilities were not as lush because it wasn't a boarding school, it was a day school. And we did have to ride our bicycles across dirt paths to get back into the area, which was way off the main road, to where the schoolrooms were housed.
So, Grace, to review your first year in Nyasaland, what were some significant events that you recall during your first year?
Mm-hmm. Well, this makes me think back onto the feelings I had during my first weeks, and I'd say that there was a sense of displacement and wondering where I was, and having no reference point to appreciate my life with. Everything was dusty and open and gray in the Blantyre area, buddy, and I didn't understand the language. There was that state, as I look back on it, you know, of feeling dislocated, and culture shock would be a great way of defining that. And I'm not that great at transition, so I would say it took me probably 6 months up in Mzuzu before, maybe even a little longer, before I began to feel more, not exactly at home yet, but at least, you know, that I had a place there and that I was getting used to the routine and the children. There were hardly children, there were teenagers. I would say that my first months there weren't all that fun. It was really quite a bit of work to get me acclimatized. But I was also getting used to being married to my husband, Mo, at the same time. So we were doing it together, and that was nice. That part was nice. And we took a lot of mini trips down to Nakata Bay, where we did go swimming in the water, even though we were probably warned not to. And I think one of the things that I really remember was our friendship with Mr. I've been another in Gombe, but he was a teacher whom we were very close with, and I learned so much from him. And one of the things he told me when we were talking in one of our conversations was to pose the question, you know, the missionaries came and gave us this cross, but it meant nothing to us, and you took away everything. You know, this feeling of being stripped of his culture by the missionary education that had come over there. So we had viewed their efforts as rather heroic, the missionaries, as rather heroic, and there'd been so much death, you know, when they came over initially. It was, an emerging thought, because we were now in the United States through the Civil Rights Movement, beginning to have a sense, you know, of other cultural perspectives, ethnocentric view. And he was, at the end of the year, I felt we had come quite full circle. I was shocked and dismayed to find out that my comments to Mr. Poole was great. He didn't hold anything against us. He just told this and said, you're going to have to transfer. And Moha and I had a great trip planned. We went down through Salisbury to I hope I got the order right, and on down to South Africa, where we stayed away and visited us. We were immediately shocked at how the white communicated off at every gates and locks. And Mo took a trip to one of the Bantustans that were for all gated communities, and it was said that it was done for the protection of the Africans, but Mo came away with the protection of the whites to keep them in their place. And immigration was really quite frightening. It was just everything was going to explode in there.
Any other events or travel during your first year that you recall?
Well, that would have been the one wonderful trip that we took that we really planned very carefully. Hiked most of the way, and I think we were on a train. So we went to Kruger Game Reserve, which is fabulous. We went to a game reserve in Botswana, which was also fabulous. We went up to Bulawayo and saw another, and we just...
Forward a year, and think about the end of your tour. You finished your assignment, two-year assignment in Nyasaland, now Malawi. Did you have a sense of achievement? Did you feel you achieved your goals? Any observations on your relations with the people of the country? Any regrets or satisfactions?
You know, it was a funny thing. People would ask us that when we got back to the United States, and I couldn't answer that question. I what kind of impact did we have on them? I had to say I didn't know. I even wondered, you know, if we had made it. For me, it seemed much more that I had gained so much from them. And I mean, my whole life changed as a result of the Peace Corps and assistance. And I wouldn't have called them poverty-stricken in the sense that it was an order to the way that they lived and they could eat. And notes, I know we have pictures of how poorly they dressed. But they did. They were a cheerful people. So we had definitely done our assignment. I think we had done teaching as we were asked to escalate to the next level, which we were asked to do. I had a lot of fun teaching French at Kasungu, making up puppets so that my rudimentary French, they could learn some French. I taught all at Kasungu, which was a whole new experience for me, and I taught etiquette in addition to teaching English and French. So it certainly did stretch my teaching abilities. I'm not sure, see, how much I really gave them. But I came home stretched. It was just...
Good. Okay, we're near the end of our questions. So here's an overall question. Overall, evaluate your service in light of three goals of the Peace Corps. And the first one is to provide technical assistance where requested.
Well, I think I got at that in the previous question. I mean, you know, we were asked to do impossible things because, you know, I hadn't been taught to teach French, and I hadn't been, English. It felt kind of like I was in the seat of my pants. And so providing them with technical assistance, yes, we definitely did that. We followed the curriculum that would allow them to matriculate, but, you know, at what high level, I'm not so sure that it was on the whole. Although I do know that it helped the students to move on to the first goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second one is the second goal of the Peace Corps was to help promote better understanding of Americans by the people served in the Nyasaland.
Well, they certainly saw us every day. They saw us struggling on our bicycles to get to schools. It's been a different experience. They saw us at the head of classrooms. And teachers saw us teaching, and we had many conversations with them. Interesting, where they shared with us, talking before Tom about beliefs, about suspicions and being watched, and on listening to them quietly while they shared. They saw us shopping at the markets, vegetables. I think they saw us, and I guess that would have been an exposure. We went to the... What do you want me to do now? Because it's recording.
No, I'll just let it run till the end. By Americans.
Well, I think that is where the benefit of the program was for me.
Wait a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. It's still going. Okay. Still going.
So it opened my eyes tremendously to the another way of life.
I'm gonna stop it. Okay. Oh, we're on side two, so let's repeat the question three. This is the third goal of the Peace Corps, is to help promote better understanding of other peoples by Americans.
Right, this is the benefit for me. I kind of think we're Maasai and the Ngorongoro. I didn't tell you about the trip that we took north the next time around, where we went to the Serengeti and experienced the great diversity of Africa, both in terms of the terrain and the people. And also learned some of the history of Nyasaland, the Bantus, who it was hard to talk about these things coming home, because people at home, which is initially when we came back, World Affairs Council's trying to talk about Africans' awareness of other cultures around the world. Americans, like myself, were great.
Going on beyond your two-year Peace Corps experience in Nyasaland or Malawi, have you continued any kind of involvement with your country of service or contact with people from that country?
When we first came back, we were in touch with Laxton, who we sent boxes of books to. He wanted to go on to secondary school, and we into a secondary school. Actually, over the years, we actually have not done much. That's amazing to me, especially after this weekend. It's been we got back, and I didn't mention the reentry of coming back. I guess, and within 3 years, we're having children, and really having a very different kind of experience. And apart from getting the Malawi newsletter and meeting occasionally with that. And I think Roland Barron had a lot of contact with people. And
what long-term effect on you did your Peace Corps service have? Any immediate and then mainly long-term? Did it change your career choices, your attitude towards people, other things?
Well, you know, it's kind of fed my entire, the whole issue around diversity and diversity compassion. We maintain. There was a tremendous amount to the diversity in the United States, and make sure that voices were heard. Long term, what's happened is that I've been very focused on the needs of children and wanting to provide if matches the need to provide African people who were more vulnerable. And its resources. And so I focused my attention. I might not have had otherwise, because I grew up in an affluent society. It's also, much to our delight, influenced our children. And it's not because we had long conversations about the Peace Corps or told them stories necessarily about us, although I'm sure we did. It just seems to have been in the air, because all of they on their own. My son was the executive director. The kids, it's in the family now. The kids have taken on this kind of focus of going out and helping, you know, where they can, and the way we continue to be extremely proud.
I think we share that. Yeah. We were among the pioneers.
We certainly were. Well, great. There's one more question.
Well, this sort of you answered it. What was your
I'm going to talk about that reentry experience.
Reentry experience.
Right. I think one of the things that happened for me coming back, and I think my kind of disconnected from Peace Corps after a while, is that I became very caught up in responding to the Women's Movement. For Dance book was published in 1962. We came back in 63. In those 3 years, everything had changed. The civil rights movement was in full swing. Women, you know, were coming out of the home and trying to make their way into the workplace. And I put on a conspiracy, being a member of the community, and became a stay-at-home mom for a number of years while we had our children. And it was because of the Women's Movement that I decided to go out and start my Montessori school, which was new. My daughter was there for a year. So my interest took a slightly different course when I came home, which was to really focus on some fulfillment of my women's issues, which had kind of laid dormant prior to the Peace Corps. I think marrying Mo so quickly and having the Peace Corps experience just like that, bing, bing, didn't allow me to address any of that. And so I came home and the went along with me, you know, well, and not all of it. I mean, it was a struggle for couples at that time, you know, to deal with those kinds of issues. And
great. Very good. I think that concludes our interview, and thank you very much. Mm-hmm.